Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Great Saturday morning. This is Professor Applewhite coming live to you on Blog Talk Radio. The show is student to teacher to student, implying that we are all students and teachers at different times of our lives. I welcome you and hope that you'll call in and give us some information about yourself and share stories about people that you know that are trying to change their mentality about being ill. Illness mentality is something that really is the worst situation that happens with people who have any type of disability or feel in any way that they are disadvantaged because of their circumstances, where they were born, their parents, their financial situation, and they feel that the world owes them something. And they develop an illness mentality too. Illness meaning that, just like we use the word dis-ease, ease in itself is what all of us search for, ease, the ease of being able to do the things we want to do. And then when we get into dis-ease, it just simply means that we have taken away that the ease that we felt or we strive for, and we call it dis-ease. So I want you to remember that because that's important to keep in the back of your mind as we're going through our show this morning. We hope that there'll be callers coming in, and the number is 1-646-727-3758. And in checking our listeners on archives and the shows, we're well over 8,500 listeners now. And so I know you guys are out there, and I really appreciate your support of the show. I'm hoping, too, that you'll call in and just give a comment about the show, either online. Our chat room is open now, so if you're uncomfortable about going on air, on live air, just go ahead and chat with me, and I will pick that up, during the show. Okay, today, Professor Applewhite is going to talk about modifying our mentality. Modifying, that means changing. Modifying our mentality about being ill. And this is an evaluation of self-pity. Continue. This is part two. Next week, we're going to wrap this up with part three. And we've got some special guests that have been invited to help us wrap up the show. Okay, so what we're going to be talking about, this is a continued discussion focused on persons who feel too disadvantaged or disabled to roll up their sleeves and contribute to their own family. And that contribution is very important. The contribution could be as simple as getting up out of bed and doing whatever you can around the house and trying to volunteer some time just to let your family see the role model, the encouragement, the motivation that you can still be part of their lives, that you are still willing to participate. So if you have any challenges with understanding how to contribute to your family and striving for independence and finding ways to support the family, you can call me. Join Professor Applewhite and over 8,000 listeners from different parts of the world as they indulge in a candid, yet compassionate discussion about those who work versus those that say they can't. And if they can't, the can't, now listen carefully, the can't means they really can per doctors, okay? But they choose to say or believe that they can't work. So remember that there's that exception there for some people who are truly unable to do anything from the bed because of their limitations physically and mentally. But we do know that there are exceptions, but we also know that there are people like our dear Stephen Hawking and so many people who have shown us through cerebral palsy, through diabetes, through multiple sclerosis, through being a paraplegic, a quadriplegic, they have shown us that they can really roll up their sleeves, go to school, and actually get a good job, a good career, okay? So those are the people that we're really focused on right now and trying to move people from that I can't work to I'd like to work, I'd like to do something, but I feel just lost. I feel depressed. I don't think I can do this. And so that's where we want you to continue listening to the show. And when you're able and willing to make that call, call White Apple Institute at 480-471-8082. That's in Arizona. We're based in Arizona. And that's 480-471-8082. Now, remember, you'll have to, if you're out of the country, out of USA, you'll have to get the country code and all that in. And then, of course, if you're out of state, you'll have to dial one before the 646. Okay, and remember, if you miss a show or you can't stay with us to listen to all the show, you can always pick this show up in our archive shows along with many other shows that we've done. And feel free to comment on the computer about what you think about our program and our mission. We are totally White Apple Institute sponsors this show, the student to teacher to student show. And White Apple Institute provides rehabilitation counseling online, and also small grants as available to help students with some of their supplies or emergency situations that they may find themselves in while trying to go to school or involved in a workforce training program. We also help students at White Apple Institute with building a social network and being able to advocate for themselves and search for resources. Okay? And so we appreciate you being part of our listening audience this morning, and we appreciate it if you come on board and share your story. But I've got a couple of stories to share with you today, and I feel comfortable with sharing them, and I will, of course, change circumstances and names to discuss these issues. But I wanted to, for a moment, let's see if I can get this microphone situated here so all of you can hear me well. I wanted to read to you from the Webster's Dictionary. So if you have a Webster's or any kind of dictionary, what I'd like you to do is to look up the word self-pity. And I think that you will be surprised at what it says. I feel that when you're talking about self-pity, that is not necessarily a terrible thing. What we're saying when we talk about self-pity is basically that we feel sorry for ourselves, and sometimes that's okay. It's not that we can't feel sorry for ourselves. You know, pity for oneself is probably one of the first stages that we go through when we actually recognize that we're you know, in a situation where we have limitations. And whenever we're told we have limitations, we don't like it. But I guarantee you that everyone you meet has some limitations. And therefore, that means that they are disabled in one way or another. Now, a lot of my younger students, especially the young football players, they don't want to hear me say that to them. They'll say, "Professor, what are you talking about? I'm not disabled." I said, "But is there something you can't do really well?" And they'll start talking about math usually. And I'll tell them that this is part of having a limitation. And when you have that limitation, that's when you need to realize that there is no perfect person. So in some way, there is an ability that you have limitations to. So this show, as it presents itself, it's about students hopefully talking to teachers and changing the way we interact, not only with our teachers but with our employers. But I tell you something, it's good for everyone to listen, and not just for yourself, but for information that you can take to other people. Okay, well, self-pity in itself means, of course, feeling pity for yourself. And pity is described by Webster as compassion for suffering or one who suffers. So why shouldn't you have compassion for yourself? I hope you do, especially when you land up with disabilities that are really limiting, because there's always levels of limitations, okay? So when you find this out, the onset of it, you know, when you're 25 and 35 years old and all of a sudden you're told you're not going to walk anymore, like one of my students now who has multiple sclerosis, MS, and all of a sudden, you know, at 30-something years old, he's told, you know, you can't walk. And so this is at the height of really preparing yourself for, you know, the workforce and settling in a good job, taking care of your family, being part of the community. And all of a sudden you're diagnosed now with a multiple sclerosis, and which is a pretty serious situation. It's a slow onset. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of the things that we can do with some of these major issues that we find in the classroom and the workforce and people that still, God bless them, they still, including myself, roll up the sleeves and keep going, okay? I myself have a spinal cord injury from being hit by a drunk driver about 4 years ago, going on 5 now, and my life has been changed considerably because of that. So at first, I'm going to admit to you that I had some self-pity. Yes, I did. I had compassion for myself, for my suffering. I had, as Webster says, a regrettable or disagreeable fact or necessity. It's a pity that you lost something. And it was a pity that I lost my ability to drive, to do the things that I was doing in my life prior to this drunk driver being irresponsible. So we see that, I hope that gives you some idea that self-pity doesn't have a person in mind. It doesn't mean that a person of low income or disadvantages or that they have other disabilities, that doesn't mean that they're automatically going to feel pity and that they're in the self-pity stage. Most people can roll up their sleeves at a certain point and move on. What that point is an individual situation. And that's the hardest thing for many people to get involved with, is that, you know, when are you going to get it together? When are you going to get up and go to work? And here are the things for you to go and then go to school. And don't just lay around. Those are the voices that continuously come in from family, relatives, and friends. And it can be really overwhelming to someone who is not at that point yet to make the change to truly adapt to their situation. So we want to make sure that we consider the compassion and even at times, yes, sympathy. Oh, gosh, how many times do I hear people saying that, what do you want, sympathy? And I hear my students telling me about people in their life that say that to them. But you know what? I love it when they come back and say to me, I am not going to give in to sympathy. I feel it sometimes. I feel the pity sometimes for myself, and I say why, and then I go back and remember what was taught to me, you know, because I teach this in my classes. Why not me? things are going to happen. Blessings happen as well as crap happens in our life. And we get concerned, family and friends, relatives and friends get very concerned at seeing someone they love being so depressed, and they haven't moved to that point where they're over the self-pity. But please, if you know someone or you are someone who's dealing with feeling bad about yourself, feeling depressed, feeling the compassion for yourself, and that you don't want to even get out of bed in the morning, I'm so glad that you found the time to just listen to the show. That's a step in the right direction. And with that, hopefully, I or someone that you can connect with, as we have callers that come in to the lines at times, and sometimes just in connecting you with White Apple Institute, we can help you build some resources in your particular community. So just hang in there. Don't let the self-pity and the depression get you so badly that you feel that this is going to be the rest of your life, because there will be a click. Let me tell you about the click. They're just like a light switch, okay? When you turn that light switch on, here you go, you got the light, and you turn it off, okay? So what you're waiting for within you, my dear friends, is you're waiting for the click to happen. And I guarantee you the click is going to happen on your time, your calendar. It's going to take a little work. It's going to take believing in yourself. It's going to take imagining and visualization. In other words, seeing yourself moving out of the bed or moving off of the couch, going to physical therapy, seeking out some vocational counseling to determine what you can do now. I've had many gentlemen that have come to me over the years, and they have been in construction. And unfortunately, they have in some way hurt themselves, or I had one with serious liver disease, so it doesn't necessarily take an accident. But most of them, they either fell off the roof or something happened on the job. And so now their whole life has been built around the construction industry. And obviously, if they are hurt badly and their spinal cord is injured, then they are unable to do the work that they did before. Okay, even loss of a shoulder, an arm, the ability to move and do the same job is gone. Now, this is the key. What do you do when you've worked so hard all your life in one area and you don't know about anything else? You have no idea about what you can do now. I mean, you can't drive the forklift anymore. You can't, maybe some of you can't even drive a truck anymore. And you're stuck, and you're like, I don't want to go to school. Okay. You don't want to go to school. How about a training program, a skill training program? I'll think about it, they might say. Because still the click hasn't happened. That click, that light going on, takes a little time for some people. Some people can jump right up and they are able to say, okay, all right, this happened in my life. I'm going forward. I'm not going to let anything stop me. But others, again, need some time. And it may be years. Sometimes it's years before people are able to get up and truly adapt to their circumstances. See, this thing about adaptation, okay? First off, when you adapt, it's a little different than adjusting. Let's see if I can put this in the most down-to-earth terms as I can. To adapt is about adjusting to a situation, okay? and being adapted to where you are, where you are, and where you may, unfortunately, many of us have been told that you're not going to walk again, you're not going to do this again, but still hold on to the idea that miracles happen, okay? Miracles do happen. I myself have come from not being able to walk to now moving into where I can walk on a walker. And so you take things in steps. Does that mean I'll be able to run down the beach like I did before? No, probably not. But I still think about it. I still visualize myself doing it. It feels good to do that. And you never know, again, what I said earlier, miracles happen. We don't know what God's plan is, until we start really, really looking at what is the purpose of all of this? What is the meaning behind this? Am I supposed to learn something from this situation that I'm in? Maybe this is what I'm supposed to do, or I'm going to make it something that I adapt to and I can still contribute to my family, to my friends. I can still participate in my community. So when you adapt, you truly know that adjustment is temporary, but adaptation is a process, okay? You undergo a change to fit the situation that you're in. You change because you can't, a perfect example I used to give is volume on a stereo. When the volume button, you can change, you can adjust it to high, to low, and it's fine that you have the ability to adjust it. But what if the volume button on a stereo breaks? And you're not able to control the volume, and the volume is way high. It's just at the maximum volume. And you're trying to turn it down, but it won't turn down because the button is broken. Of course, you know you can always unplug it, but stay with me on this point. Is that adaptation means that you cannot change the button. You cannot move the button and change the volume. There's basically no way out. Even if you unplug it and plug it back in again, the volume button is broken. So that's what happens to us when we land up in situations where we're told we have limitations, where we're told you're not going to be able to do this or return to this, to the life that you had before because of a car accident or because of an injury or illness on the job. But does that mean that life is over? No, it does not. It does not, absolutely does not mean that your life is over and that you have to adapt to a couch or a bed and staying in the house every day, which is different than what you did before. Now, if that's what you did before, then that's fine. I mean, that's where you live. But if you were the kind of person that was at least getting out a little bit and going to work and maybe taking a couple of classes here and there, volunteering, dating, or going out with your spouse, you know, to a movie or whatever. You know, you want those things back again. So how do you adapt your life now to doing that? It's truly an adjustment, but it's a permanent way of thinking, okay? It's like you have to make this behavioral change. It's not just a physical change. It's a behavioral change. And you have to begin to modify, now get this, modify your environment. Modify your culture even. Oh, I bet you're saying, what do you mean modify my culture? Culture is not about what color skin you are, although that may play some role in it. Culture is basically your beliefs and your values and your attitude about life.
which is influenced many times by your family, your friends, the way you grew up, the religion that you participate in. These things are formed. Your environment is formed by those things. But now you've been told that you are among the disabled, and you have that label now, or you give in to the fact that you are so disadvantaged that you can't do anything. My mother beat me. My father was a drunk. My family was poor. All of those disadvantages begin to overwhelm you. And now it's difficult to truly adapt. Because sometimes we want to just stay where we're at. Pull the cover up over our heads and go back to sleep again. And if it's not pulling the cover up over our heads, it's sitting there in front of the TV, which is often called the boob tube, and become a couch potato. And never pick up the phone to even talk to your friends anymore. You sit at the table for dinner, if you even go out for dinner. Get up for dinner, I mean. And you don't say anything to your family. You're very quiet. These are sad signs. Yes, it is sad. And the family grieves with you for your loss. Relatives and friends grieve with you. Believe me, anyone that loves you knows that you have gone through tremendous struggles with being told that you now have a limitation, or being born with one and beginning to recognize as you grow older that you are truly different than the norm. And let's say different, not in a negative way, because I want you to understand everybody's different. Everybody's different. But we know that sometimes when we are labeled as disabled, we get into the issue of, but I don't look like that. I don't walk. I don't talk like that. I remember one of my students, we'll call her Sally, who had cerebral palsy. Pretty serious. That's a disease that, dis-ease, again, that most of us are born with. We're born with cerebral palsy. There's not a treatment that we can go in and fix it right away to prevent it from being with us all of our lives. So with cerebral palsy or CP, what we have to do is understand, just like with anything else, understand what it means to be in any way limited. What do I have to adapt to now? What do I have to change in my environment as I grow older to make it more comfortable for me to become part, to begin to participate in life, in activity, as you choose? Get that part now. As you choose. Because there may be some times that people will give you information about something that's going on, and you're not interested. You're just not interested in that. And they begin to feel that, oh, well, he or she is not going to do anything with their life because I've given them all this information and they're not doing anything about it. Well, that's on them and their ignorance. Ignorance is just a lack of knowledge about where you are at. If you feel that you are disadvantaged, if that's how you perceive yourself, that's how you see yourself as disadvantaged, or you see yourself as disabled and unable to do things, then what I'm going to say to you now may shock you. I send you much love, and I send you a seed of motivation right now.
I'm hoping that relatives and friends listening will also help me to plant a seed of motivation and let it be. And accept the individual, the person, for what he or she is. Plant the seed, let them water it. And this is biblically speaking. God will make it grow. So there's a process in that, in being motivated by just the drop of a seed. Just leave information. Sometimes that's all you can do. With somebody who's struggling with alcoholism and drug addiction, all you can do is leave the seed. So you leave information about the drug or drug addiction. You hopefully can introduce them to people who have overcome it. You can ask them if they want to be involved in counseling and get over this. And if they say no, if that person says no, friends and relatives, respect that choice. And leave the seed alone. And feel good that you planted the seed. It's very, very difficult to talk about students who, I have many students who have epilepsy. But I have one case in particular to share with you. And we'll call her Miss C. And Miss C has had epilepsy all of her life. But as she grew older, she went from the very, very beginning stages of epilepsy. Her parents did see it. And as she grew older, which is kind of unusual, she started having seizures that they call the grand mal, or that's what some of you may remember it by. But the seizure in itself, people who have seizures, through many times, through ancient times, were often excluded from communities. And unfortunately, they were labeled as not only disabled, but demonized. Wow. That's a heavy label to put on somebody, demonized. But that's what happened. Now, so people with epilepsy have, at least Miss C, had a more difficult time breaking the mold of where she was, taking the seeds of motivation that had been put in front of her, information about the epileptic foundation in her community. She had been looking, and she didn't throw the brochure away that her mother had got for her, brought to her. She left it on the table, which is a good thing. Moms and dads out there, friends, just leave it. Sometimes the person won't even want to take it and look at it at the time that you give it to them. Just leave it on the table. So someone had planted a seed and left information for her about people with epilepsy who work and go to school. Now, when she saw that brochure and the resource connected to it, wow, her whole world brightened up. And she did this very privately, she told me. She didn't want anybody to see her reading this material. So, she begins to get the seed of motivation and begins to start watering it. And she becomes in touch with the Spirit of God within her. And she begins to say, could I do that? And I can tell you now, that Miss C is now an accountant, and she is doing a great job with her life. She went to school to become an accountant, and believe me, she had challenges going to school. You know, when you have epilepsy,
you know, in addition to the fact that people assume, even in today's world, yes, I know that it's ridiculous, but even in today's world, we find that there are people that not only are those that are demonized when they have disabilities or certainly epilepsy. Do you know that there was a time when people actually believed that there should be sterilization of those with epilepsy? Now, that's a horrible thing to know when you're suddenly in a situation where you realize you are an epileptic and the doctor is telling you you're an epileptic and defining you by that. When, my dear friends, you are not defined by your disability. They tell us about situations that we should not become involved with. They tell us about the limitations that we have with any disability or disadvantage. But you don't have to accept that. You don't have to live with working around the danger of having a seizure. You don't have to deal with that on a day-in, hourly basis, all the time, 24/7. You can break out of that mold. You know that when you get ready to do that, though, just like with many of the students I'm sharing stories about, you know when you're ready to jump out of that mold. And you know that with epilepsy, you can't climb into high and dangerous places. You know that. You also know that you can't work with machinery, that it's, for some of us with epilepsy, not all, but for some of us, we have to deal with lights, not being around lights, or swimming alone. Okay, so that's a good explanation of, when we go back to adaptation, of how we need to adapt our environment. So we adapt our world around us in a different way. That's it. And we roll up our sleeves, water that seed inside, and go forward. And for those of you who are not spiritually inclined, I didn't say religiously inclined. I said spiritually inclined, no matter what religion you are, that you begin to believe, you begin to have faith that whatever your situation is, that there is a God force within you, yes, that keeps your heart beating, that keeps your blood flowing, that no matter what level of activity your brain is at, you still have some activity in that brain. And that's something to be thankful for. We encourage you to call. We'll take a short break here. We encourage you to call in at 1-646-727-3758 to join in our discussion about modifying our mentality about being ill, an evaluation of self-pity. We thank Nazim Rashid for his beautiful music. Applewhite, and this is a student to teacher to student radio show on the internet. Now, we're still continuing our discussion on modifying our mentality about being ill and evaluation of self-pity. And to wrap this up, to begin to wrap this up with about 20 minutes remaining on the show, I hope that you've derived a better understanding about self-pity and that it's okay to feel it. It's just not healthy to feel it all the time. I hope that you understand that it's okay to have compassion for yourself about the suffering you may be going through. You know, they relate a lot of PTSD. Whenever you hear that word PTSD, that concept, it means post-traumatic stress disorder. And that after, that means after you've gone through something very, very stressful in your life, that it starts coming back up again by at different times, triggered by things usually in your environment, okay? Or you're pushed up against the wall and you start remembering what happened. Most of the time we look at PTSD as something related to our soldiers who have been at war and come back and they are from Vietnam. We started seeing these cases from Vietnam, but they even go back to World War One and Two, where people were involved in traumatic situations and our soldiers fought, and we appreciate so much the veteran. I'm a veteran myself, and I appreciate my fellow veterans for all the work that they did, especially those who were in wartime. And so usually we associate PTSD with veterans, soldiers. Now, there's another example of PTSD I want you to think about. PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, is part of acknowledging your disability, that label being on you. Because you've had, somehow, even if you were born with a disability, you still have this recognition point that happens in your life where you look around and you say, hey, I would like to be married. Or if you are married, you may say, I would like to do more things with my spouse, with my husband, or my significant other. I would like to be more active. And here we go with that light switch again. So the light switch goes on, you recognize who you are, what your limitations are. And you fall backwards because of thinking about the trauma of what happened to you. So in other words, many of us, most of us, who have a disability or listen carefully, a social disadvantage. In other words, they were raised in an environment where there were many, many challenges facing them. Learning disabilities, a home without parental support, a very, very abusive environment. And PTSD happens for those individuals too, just like it does for those recognizing their physical or mental disability at different stages in their life. I ask you, I encourage you to read some material on post-traumatic stress disorder. I encourage you, if you feel that you are held back or you know someone who is held back by their past. Dreams could be nightmares. It could be in the middle of the day that you start thinking about the car accident that you were in. Or you start thinking about how someone abused you when you were younger. And from that, stress builds up. And you go back into this depression. The self-pity comes up for you and stays there long enough where you drop out of school quit your job or make your job fire you, either one. Yeah, there's people out there that make the employer fire them because they're so overwhelmed by the stress that happened in their life before, in the past, that they let that overcome them in the present. So it's important for you to recognize that post-traumatic stress disorder affects most of us that have gone through any kind of trauma, serious trauma in their lives. And what determines serious now? You know, what determines serious? We have a caller on the line right now, and we're going to go ahead and have her. I think this is a board member here from White Apple Institute. Hello, you're on the air. This is Professor Applewhite. Who's calling?
This is Dr. Beverly Polonitz.
Hello, Dr. Polonitz. I thought it was one of our board members for White Apple Institute.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. You're coming in at just a great time, as a matter of fact. I'm doing great. I feel like I'm on a roll here, and we're really getting into this deep discussion with our listeners out there about this: who determines what is serious? What's a serious trauma? Who determines what's serious in our life? Somebody on the outside or the individual themselves?
Well, I could definitely like to, you know, say a little bit about that. It's absolutely ourselves that determine what is serious. How we perceive our environment dictates how we feel about it. If we perceive it as bad, then it is bad to us.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we're going to feel. If we perceive it as good, then it's good to us. That's how we're going to feel about it. And that's how we have some people who are in dire circumstances that we may feel are just terrible, but they're very light and happy and just they feel good about themselves. It's because the way they perceive their environment is not so bad. So
right.
We decide ourselves how we feel. An example, I was talking with someone the other day, and this individual said, you know, so much is going on. I don't know whether I am coming or going. Now, their perception of coming and going caused conflict inside of them. And the way I expressed back to them was, you are doing both. You are coming and you are going. Put it in the proper perspective. You have just left this particular second. You're moving to the next one. What is important is right now, not what is past, going, not what is coming, future, but right now. Life is now. And how we perceive this exact moment is exactly how we're going to feel about it and about ourselves.
And you know, Dr. Polonitz, I don't know if you were able to listen to the earlier part of the show, but we were going through the fact that I was telling our listeners that there's no problem with having self-pity. We all get into that once in a while in our lives. The key is how do you come out of it? How do you allow people to give you the seeds of motivation? And even if you don't come out of that self-pity situation right away, that you allow yourself to at least look at the power of God within, of spirit within, and know that there's something that keeps you going. So whatever that something is enough to hopefully motivate you to roll up your sleeves and say, can I take a course at college? Can I volunteer somewhere? Can I get off of this couch? Can I get out of this bed and do something in my life? I want to go to work. I want to do something. But that's all in the mind. And just like you said earlier, that's the key, isn't it? They've got to begin visualizing or perceiving themselves as rolling up their sleeves and getting going with life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As I was, you know, this ties right into what I was just speaking about. When I say life is now, it's right now. Self-pity is reflecting on the past and things that you may feel, you know, bad about. You're pitying yourself. And in order to pull yourself out of that, think of right now, right at this moment, and move on forward from there. Whatever it is you want, you desire, or to make yourself even feel better about yourself, requires you to take an action. It requires you to do something. So you taking a class is very good, being able to interact with other people, to have a purpose for when you get up in the morning, a purpose for going and doing something for yourself and for others. And then there's no time. There's no room for self-pity. If you're spending your time working on doing for self and others, there's no room, there's no time for self-pity.
That's a very good point. You know, we know it's there. We're not going to ignore that people feel that way. I've even felt that way at times. I'm sure you have too. But the point is that we get going. We start getting active, and we let it go. Okay, you know, I was diagnosed with cancer, and you've had your battles, I'm sure, with life and conditions that people could perceive as disabling. But you didn't do it. You rolled up your sleeves. You overcame any self-pity that even tried to rise inside of you, and you went forward. And now, officially, you will be conferred as Dr. Polnitz at Arizona State University on December the 15th.
That's correct.
And I'm proud to say that you are one of the greatest board members that we have, in addition to Dr. Martha Bergen and so many others that have joined on the board to support and promote the concept of White Apple Institute. And listeners, you can hear it in her voice and what she says, that she's right in line with the mission. And that's what this show is all about. We want to encourage you to get off the couch and get out of the bed and get out of the house and do something. Right, Dr. Polnitz?
That is so absolutely right. I specialize in women's empowerment.
Yes.
And a part of that is getting the person moving. Get up off the couch, turn the TV off. That's somebody else's life. Create your own. Get up off the couch and get moving. And I, as you were saying, I have had my times with also I've had a breast cancer. And upon the breast cancer, the messages that was coming to me that I received was, have courage. And I based that whole battle on courage. Just have courage. Every day, every moment, just have courage. And now coming through that, I talk with people, I speak with women who have are going through breast cancer, who have already been through it. And these are the women that I'm working with on a daily basis right now. And so if there's any listeners out there who need to talk.
That's right.
Please.
So that
you
they can
contact me. Exactly, and I can be contacted through White Apple Institute. We'll be able to get a phone number for me, and we can talk, and, you know, we can just do all kind of wonderful things, because there's you don't have to have self-pity. There is a bright, beautiful, beautiful life for you. We just need to step into it, and we work together to step into it.
That's right. I appreciate you willing to get into a team approach. Actually, you're kind of like a coach in a way. And that's why you're so important to White Apple Institute, because you're, as we grow, we are always accumulating people that need to talk, especially women who need to talk about their disabilities and not if they get away from the label, okay, of disabled. We need to do that. But we have to recognize, okay, we were diagnosed with this. It doesn't dictate our life. And we need to be in touch with more people like you to coach us along sometimes. The seed may be there. It's already planted somewhere. But even if the seed isn't planted, listeners, Dr. Polnitz can help you find those seeds of motivation and teach you how to water them. And know that the energy, the spiritual energy on this planet, is what will help it grow. But Dr. Polnis, we truly appreciate the work you're doing, and we want you to tell the women listeners out there, the women who are listening, how to get in touch with you if they need your help.
Okay. The way to contact me, my company's name is Life Is Now. Life Is Now. I will have a domain name to give you next week, but in the meantime, you can call me at 602-512-1104.
Say that again, please.
Okay. That's 602-512-1104.
And we'll
now
keep
that's
that also
my, that's,
in our research.
Right. That is my office number. Leave a message, and I will contact you back if I don't answer, that is. Hopefully I'll answer your call. I'll be available. Okay?
Yes. And Dr. Polnis, is there I assume that the first call is not – there's no charge, but is there a charge in the future, or do you give leniency for those who are in financial hardship? And
absolutely.
Still work with them?
I work with people.
Yes.
This time in our lives, we all have to help each other. There are fees attached to my services. However, the fees are on a sliding scale basis based on the individual's needs and abilities to pay. I will not turn someone away who has absolutely no money. That is not going to happen. And we also have group meetings where we get together in groups and we talk. So there's ways to work through it, you know?
That's right. That's right. Okay. And we wish that more people like you out there. We truly do.
Oh, I'm happy to be here to be of service to the world and the community. Through my life coaching business, Life Is Now, I'm able to do that. And I'm very thankful to be in a position to do that. And I thank you for having me on the show. And I look forward to hearing from some of these women listeners out there. I know there's a lot of you. So please.
Yes, there's over 80% now, yes. And it's not in. Pardon me?
I didn't hear what you had just said. There's over how many?
8,500 listeners now. Almost 9,000 listeners out there.
Wonderful.
That listen to the show and are encouraged. So hopefully they will hear your words and find some encouragement in what you said today. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And you can see, listeners, that as she's part of the White Apple Institute, and that is the same way. That is part of the mission. We never turn anyone away. We have many other board members that have great talent and will. And we are about to close our show, and I just want to wish everyone much love and peace for the rest of your week. And hopefully we have planted a seed of motivation for you. And we thank Dr. Polnis for joining us this morning. We will be with you again next Saturday morning from 10 to 11 Arizona time. So, and we thank Brother Nazim Rashid.